A ban on TikTok moves one step closer to reality. The FTC bans non-compete clauses, and artificial intelligence is now worthy of Top Gun status in the Air Force. We'll talk about these stories and more on this episode of Today in Tech. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Today in Tech. I'm Keith Shaw. The guy behind the monitors is Chris. Hello, sir.
What's up?
And joining us on this week's show in the guest co-host chair is Jack Gold, principal analyst at J. Gold Associates. Welcome back, Jack.
Thanks, Keith. Good to be here.
You're only here for a week. We had a little gap between our guest hosting thing. So thank you again for filling in. But it's always good to see you.
I always fit between the gaps. It's great.
All right, let's jump into the whole TikTok story. We've covered this since the beginning of a lot of the TikTok drama. And so, you know, again, we're facing another TikTok ban in the works. It's a lot more serious this time. The Senate, which I thought it was going to stall in the Senate, but apparently it didn't. And President Biden signed the bill. So now it gives TikTok, basically ByteDance, the company's Chinese owner, will have up to a year to sell the app. If it can't, then TikTok will be banned in the U.S. There are 17 different steps that are happening here. Including the ability for TikTok to, you know, go the court route and sue. Because in Montana, like, that's currently held up in Montana banned it as well. And so that's in the federal court system. I'm sure that the Supreme Court will look at it at some point, whether that this is a First Amendment free speech issue. They could sell, you know, if there's like all of these other scenarios that people are talking about. So what I wanted to ask Jack and Chris was, were you surprised that it got passed the Senate level? I think that initially the House bill was 6 months, and then they negotiated it with the Senate to make it up to a year. And so were you surprised to see that it got passed the Senate as well?
I was a little surprised.
Yeah.
Because, you know, yeah. It's the Senate, so.
Sometimes cooler heads prevail.
I wasn't that surprised.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jack.
I wasn't that surprised because the House Republicans did a smart thing. You know, they segmented it out into four different bills because of all of the funding issues for Ukraine and Israel and Taiwan and all the rest. They wanted to vote on all that stuff separately. And when they pass it off to the Senate, they combined them all again into the Senate bill. So I'm sure that the Senate wanted to get something passed really quickly. Certainly the Biden administration did. Trying to renegotiate, you know, banning that and having to go back to the House and starting all over again would have been a real nightmare. So I'm not surprised it got passed. That's number one. Number two is, you know, TikTok is a problem. People are saying, yeah, but there's 170 million users on it or something like that. That's right. Half the population of the U.S. It's not just U.S., it's everyone, right? But there is a real distinct issue in my mind that given that it's controlled by the Chinese government, that there's a real security risk.
Right.
Not only from the perspective of the data they collect, but they control the algorithms. So if I wanted to mess around with the kinds of stuff you're seeing on your screen, I could do that.
Right.
And that to me is even scarier than, you know, just giving them my data, right? Because they're influencing 170 million people, and they've already done that. There are examples of undue influence on TikTok. You know, the Israel-Gaza war, the election interference. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that they can muck around with, and especially since a lot of the users are kids, you know, they're teens.
Yeah.
They're 10, 12, 14-year-olds. They don't know what's going on in the world. Their life is TikTok. So if you give them the wrong messaging, that's what they think is real.
Yeah. We've covered that on several episodes here, too, where we've talked about the social media influence on adolescents. And TikTok is one of the companies that are being sued here. So I'm actually pleased. I wouldn't be upset if it went away, even though there is the first, you know, some of these First Amendments. Do they have the right to ban an app in a country? You know, there are lots of other levels that from a journalism's perspective, you're like, you don't want to see anything that bans a free, you know, a free speech, whether TikTok is actual free speech, especially since a lot of these influencers that have, you know, made money this way, you can, there are other alternatives for them. They can go to, you know, YouTube Shorts, they can go to Instagram, and, you know, those don't have the same type of ownership issues that TikTok does. I don't see TikTok basically, I don't see ByteDance giving up the algorithm for a sale. That's their gold nugget right now. So I could see them just saying, look, we're not going to sell, and they will go through with the ban. But like, part of me is like, they're going to try to see what the Supreme Court says. And then if that fails and the Supreme Court says, yeah, of course we could ban it for national security interest or whatever, then I would think that they would have to take a serious look about deciding whether to, you know, ban it in the U.S. or just sell it.
Yeah. It's not, aside from the legal challenges, it's not going to happen that quickly anyway. Right. First of all, the interpretation, what I've seen people write about from a legal perspective is they're going to ban it in the app stores. But if you've already got it on your phone,
right,
they're not going to remove it. So 170 million users may still be able to use it, just never get any upgrades.
Right, and that raises a couple of other concerns, especially from those of us that have been in the IT space and understand that new bugs and updates can happen all the time. And if you can't update your app, then you're vulnerable for even, you know, more things on your phone or computer.
But there's another aspect to this that people ignore. That it's political more than technical, right? But China already bans WhatsApp and other U.S. apps.
Right.
And no one talks about the fact that China's banning our stuff. All they talk about is free speech for Chinese stuff in America. I mean, you know.
Well, that's the difference between, you know, living in America and living in China, right? They don't have free speech over there.
Well, the other thing, too, is like, I'm pretty sure we can't buy up property in China, but China's buying up property here.
I know, but that's supposed to make us a better country, isn't it?
Is it though?
Well, no, by having these freedoms. I mean, come on. Like, do we want to turn ourselves into, you know, just do what China does? Then you're opening another whole can of worms.
No, but from a trade perspective, we already do that, right?
Yeah.
China bans, you know, sale of whatever. We ban, you know, we ban sale of NVIDIA AI chips to China. By the way, they're getting around it, but that's a different story. And they turn around and say, okay, well, we're not going to buy any, you know, Intel processors or whatever. I mean, that from a trade perspective, that makes a lot of sense, because you don't want a penalty. You don't want all our money flowing out of the country. You want some of it flowing back in.
Mm-hmm.
Different discussion than, you know, social media and the impact it has on people. But it's not an invalid concern when you talk about the overall scheme of things.
Right, right. But it at the core of the political side of things, it's the national security and the privacy issues, yeah. Right? Yeah,
for sure.
Another interesting story that came out was the Wall Street Journal. There was a story about what's the value of TikTok. And again, a lot of it depends on, you know, it could be between $20 billion up to $100 billion if they actually, you know, included a lot of those features like the algorithm. I still think that the algorithm is probably the most important part of it. But yeah, I mean, that's you know, there are a lot of people that are lining up to try to buy it, even though, yeah, I still don't think that ByteDance is gonna budge here.
I think this is another.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
And by the way, how many people can actually put the money together to afford to buy it if it's really $100 billion?
That's not a lot of
valuation.
Yeah. It wouldn't be a single person, would it? Or you'd have to have a group.
No, probably not. But even so, I mean, you know, they're already talking about Steve Mnuchin, I think, is trying to put together a deal with a bunch of investors. That was in the press. They're talking about maybe some big companies getting together, but there isn't a whole lot of ability for companies on their own to spend $100 billion.
Right.
Just wait.
And so,
Chris,
even if they decide to sell, it'd be very interesting to see who can actually afford to buy it.
Just wait. Elon Musk is going to swoop in and he's going to take X in TikTok and do some sort of crazy state of the art social media.
It'll be called
just watch
TikToks. It'll or
yeah,
TikToks.
X TikTok. We're going to get to Elon Musk later in the show, I think. I think there's a lot of things going on with him these days. But yeah,
here's a surprise.
I don't think we're gonna see a sale, and maybe I'll be surprised. But I think that the courts will be the next step for all of these.
Yeah.
Well, and the legal stuff will take 5, 6, 7 years anyway, so it's not happening anytime soon.
Right. So anybody that's out there that is, you know, loves the app, maybe making money off the app. It's, you know, the stories I've seen is like, all right, don't worry yet. It's not going anywhere at the moment. Have that plan B ready in case something does happen. But you know, and I don't feel too bad for a lot of those people anyway, because social media influencing just feels like a cheat to me. But that's me as an old guy.
Yeah,
and that there are other alternatives out there. Right. All right, now there is something that is affecting all of the workers, including tech workers, and this is what I wanted to talk about this week or in this episode. Was the Federal Trade Commission this week banned employers from using non-compete contracts to prevent most workers from joining rival firms, achieving a policy goal that is popular with labor but faces an imminent court challenge from business groups. This is the first time in more than 50 years that FTC officials have issued a regulation to mandate an economy-wide change in how companies compete. The commission has historically operated like a law enforcement agency, investigating and suing individual companies over practices or deals that deem to violate the law. The rule prohibits companies from enforcing existing non-compete agreements on anyone other than senior executives. It also bans employers from imposing new non-compete contracts on senior executives in the future. FTC Chair Lina Khan said the rule restores rights to Americans that corporations have taken by imposing non-compete clauses in the workplace. Quote, robbing people of their economic liberty is also robs them of all sorts of other freedoms. I'm wondering what the impact will be in the tech space. And I know that one of the columnists for Computer World also wrote about this as well. Basically, right. Saying that 30% to 40% of workers are required to sign non-competes after they've already accepted a job. Like Jack, what, you know, you think this is going to be a big deal for tech workers, right?
It's a really big deal for a couple of reasons.
Yeah.
You know, having been under contract, under non-compete at a former company years ago, it really does limit my ability to go out and find another job. Now, there are ways. So the companies would argue, let's take the company side first. The company would argue that they've trained me. I know about all their, you know, whatever, their proprietary algorithms, right. If it's software, the hardware, whatever it is, right? And I'm going to take that with me. First of all, if it's in my brain, it's in my brain. You know, you can't strip it out. Secondly, if you're a smart company, rather than having a non-compete, what you have is an NDA with me, non-disclosure agreement, that says, if you go anywhere else, you cannot share proprietary information. And that's standard process, not just for employees, but for partner companies that you work with, right? If I'm working with Microsoft or Oracle or, you know, pick one, IBM, it could be anybody. You're going to have an NDA with them when you talk about contracts. So it should be the same for the employees. The issue for me is that if I'm an employee of, I'll pick one, and it could be anybody, right? I'll pick Google, you know, and they have a cloud instance that you can go out and rent. And I decide that I want to go work. I don't like Google. I want to go work for AWS or Microsoft Azure.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. Because I've got to not compete, and they're direct competitors in the marketplace.
Right.
So that means that I am pretty much stuck at Google, or I got to go open a deli, right? Which doesn't have any proprietary information.
And even like if you wanted to go on and start and do a startup, right? I've got a better idea for a cloud service provider, and you know, and you wouldn't be able to do that through some of these non-competes, right?
Right. In fact, it's worse for startups because, in theory, if AWS wanted me bad enough, they're big enough, they could go to court with Google. If I go out and start get a startup because I got a better idea, and it's in the same space, what VC is going to fund a court battle that's going to take 3, 4, 5 years to play out?
Right.
Not going to happen. So I'm basically prevented from doing that. So yeah, that's a really good point.
It's weird because I've never really run into that because I've usually been kind of the low person on the totem pole. Like I'm a frontline worker for the most part. And the only times I've seen it in the media space, I don't think a lot of media companies wanted to, you know, spend the money to go to court. But we did start seeing instances where some new companies were formed, and this new company started picking off people from the company. So like they would hire one guy or like one editor or an executive, and then that person would start to try to bring over, and at some point they said stop, like you can't do that, you can't start poaching people. So that was the one time where they're like, well, we might have to force the non-compete. But I don't even know if I have a non-compete now.
I think it'll just make things more competitive, like
well, yeah,
especially about poaching. It's like, well, if you want to prevent your competition from stealing your, you know, poaching your employees, then maybe, you know, do something different.
Say the loud part out loud. Yeah, like
I pay them more. Yeah, you know.
Yeah. I saw a response. It was like, if companies are really that concerned about non-competes, they should just pay their employees more so that they don't feel the enticement to jump or to get recruited.
Those have to be more competitive.
It's not just the money, though, right? It's about the job opportunity. It's about the environment within the company.
Yeah. Make your company better.
But you know, there are right to work states that have banned this before. California was one. And now I think they're just making it national. I can see both sides, but I got to weigh in heavily on the employee side, which is, you know, give me the freedom to market myself and get the best job I possibly can. I won't share your secrets. That's fine. If you want to sue me because I shared your secrets or, you know, took your diagrams with me, that's a whole different ballgame, right? That's a trade secret issue.
Right.
But don't prevent me from going out and getting a better job.
I've known coworkers that knew they were going to either leave a job or they were about to get laid off. Or now layoffs are different, I think, right? You can't enforce a non-compete if you let the employee go.
Right.
In theory.
Right.
But I've seen these coworkers, like they knew they were leaving or they knew the job, and they start printing out all of their contacts. Like they start doing, they're preemptively taking all of their stuff with them and hiding it. It's like, okay, well, now you're admitting that you're basically going over to help, you know, the new company.
Well, so, that's also illegal.
Probably. Yeah.
No, because you're basically, the rule is you're stealing corporate information by taking their customer list.
Right.
That's clearly illegal. There've been a lot of court cases around that. You can't do that.
So, dumb question. Do we think that there are going to be states that try to block this?
States, probably. I don't know. I doubt a state would try. It feels like the people that are going after the ruling at the moment are companies like the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and they've got a lot of lawyers and they've got a lot of money, and they are defending the rights of businesses to compete. Yeah. But it doesn't seem like anyone else is in favor of keeping the non-compete. Jack, have you heard anything?
Companies are. I mean, there are a lot of big companies that are worried because they think it's strategic for their needs. Non-competes are.
Right.
There are already states, like I said, California passed the right to work law. I think there are others. I don't know them all, honestly. But there are some states where non-competes are illegal, or at least very limited. And not illegal.
Is this something that you see in companies that are not tech companies that are, you know, maybe like?
Yes. Yeah. Financial companies, insurance companies, they're medical, anybody who's got proprietary processes in their company that they don't want a competitor to get to have gone NDA. Gone non-compete.
Okay. And the answer for them is really just to do the NDAs. And what was the other thing? It was NDAs and something else. Privacy?
Yeah, I mean, you can do, basically, it's an NDA that says you will not take any corporate information with you. You will not share it if you go to go to another job. You know, it's basically it's a secrecy pledge.
Yeah, and it does.
You can't share.
And with all the tech layoffs that have been happening in the last couple of years, it feels like those companies have more to worry about than whether they're going to lose some employees to
to NDAs were. You know, the high end top 10% of employee base. And that makes some sense, right? If it's chief of marketing, if it's chief of engineering, that kind of stuff. But it's gotten to the point where it's even down to the IT staff. And that's, you know, what proprietary information do you have as an IT? I guess you do, right? You have access to all the computers.
And you know what apps that a certain company, you know, you might know the list of the apps that they were using.
Yeah. Yeah.
But does that really make you more competitive or less competitive? I don't know.
That's the problem, right? Yeah. Where do you draw the line?
Interesting. All right. So do you think that this will be held up? I mean, this is, or do you think, again, this is a court thing that we might not know for a while?
It's going to go through the courts. It'll take a while.
Go ahead.
I think ultimately, I don't know what the Supreme Court will do about anything these days.
That's
so
true.
That's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
Because they're all over the map.
And it's interesting that some of the stuff I was reading was it's more about whether or not the FTC has the ability to make this rule rather than the nature of the rule.
Right.
And, you know, is this something that the FTC does, or is this something that Congress has to kind of pass a law around? That'll be the big issue.
Well, they do that because that's what is simpler to get through the courts. Right.
Right.
That's an easy one to adjudicate as opposed to, is this fair?
Right. Right. Because how do you prove as a business that you are damaged by the loss of a non-compete?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right. I'm glad we've had that little political lesson and business lesson here today. Thank you, Jack.
Quite honestly, it affects a lot of people in the tech industry, right? It's really an important... It's equivalent in my mind to, can people form unions?
Yeah. Right.
Same kind of argument. What's better for me, or is it better for the company, you know?
Right. And again, you wouldn't have a lot of these issues if you didn't have a clash with your employees so often.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did read one thing that was interesting during a lot of this research was that non-competes are in businesses that I would never even think of, like cosmetologists or hairdressers have non-competes. So that, you know, if you work for a hair salon, I think most of the ones that I've dealt with are all independent contractors anyway. But if you weren't and you were working for, you know, a salaried employee, you couldn't just move down the street and then take all your client base with you. I guess that's the big fear. So that's why they have those in that industry. But I was like, wow, even cosmetology. Wow.
Yeah, that's really iffy because if, let's say you're a hairdresser. I mean, mine doesn't have a whole lot of work to do anyway, but if I know that he or she is moving somewhere else and I decide to go there, what's to prevent that from happening?
Right. Well, I guess I think that the business has changed a little bit too, where those people are considered independent contractors and not an employee of the person who owns the salon.
Right.
But if I'm wrong, if there's any cosmetologists watching this, you know, put a little note in the comments. All right. We're going to switch gears to talk about the Apple Vision. There was a story this week that said Apple has reportedly slashed production volumes of the Vision Pro mixed reality headset by nearly half. And this is according to an analyst named Ming-Chi Kuo. Kuo reckons that the original plan was for up to 800,000 units of the headset in 2024. This has now been cut to 400,000 to 450,000. He also notes that Apple has made the call to reduce production before the headset has even gone on sale on markets outside the U.S. This suggests that demand in the U.S. has been much lower than expected. What's more, the poor performance of the Vision Pro could mean that a planned update to the headset in 2025 may be canceled. Now, that's a big red flag, I think.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, look, other than I buy this thing, I put it on my head, I play with it for an hour, and I think it's really cool. What's to keep me using it day in, day out for the next year or 2 years or 3 years?
Yeah.
What are the apps? What's the benefit? It's a big monstrous thing, right? It's heavy. It's $3,500 to begin with.
Yep.
So that's limiting the market right there. Now, they put it at a high price to begin with because they didn't want to sell 10 million of them. I get it. But unless you've got a real killer app to go along with this thing, who's going to go out and spend $3,500 for basically a toy? Because there isn't a whole lot you can do with this unless you're a super, super high-end gamer that wants to use it. What else are you going to do with this thing? So, and it's probably even more so true in the rest of the world.
I think that's the major problem.
They put this thing out in the marketplace, and it just wasn't well thought out about how do I keep people using it? Because if I buy it, use it for an hour, and throw it in a drawer, and never use it again, which by the way, a lot of Oculus users also did.
Yeah, I've done that with my Sony PSVR for the gaming world. I haven't touched that in probably a year or 2 years.
Yeah. You know, it's stereo television all over again.
You know, and they were trying to they were trying, you know, Apple was trying to make the case that this was going to be used for businesses. You'd be using this at your desk with, you know, you'd be able to control a Mac. You'd have your Mac desktop up there. Then you could have all of the space for all of these different windows. Instead of a dual display, you could have now seven different displays all in this virtual space.
It's like use it for work. It's like, yeah, we're just using Zoom. That's it.
And I think that, you know, when they tried to make that pitch towards the business community was like, you're freaking crazy. Like, this isn't going to work. I don't even want to pay my employees overtime. I'm not spending $3,500 on a system for each employee. Like, that's just crazy.
It's worse than that. Yeah. Are you really going to put that thing on your head for 8 hours a day?
No.
Right.
No.
We're already hearing, like, you know, I think I saw a meme
sitting for long periods of time
of the lady in the promo using the headset, but then she had a neck brace on too because it was hurting her.
Well,
neck
think about it. Just like sitting for long periods of time.
Just
that alone. Like, now you're going to leave this, you know, screen directly in front of your eyes for, you know, X amount of hours a day. I think that it's really because of the price and also bad timing. If you think about it, especially today, you know, things are tight. Like, how many people do you know has, you know, who has like $3,500 expendable income that right. you're just going to spend on right. a headset? It's like, no, I don't think people are geared up for that.
Yeah.
So,
you know, there was also a story that came out from Meta when they were reporting their quarterly earnings this week. The Reality Labs portion of Meta posted a $3.85 billion loss in the first quarter. Revenue was up 30%. It was, you know, revenue in the metaverse division was $440 million, about 30%, you know, which is up 30% from the $339 million a year ago. But, you know, $3.85 billion. And, you know, and it feels like Meta's kind of stuck doing this for a while. Like, you know, and so I guess my question is that, does it really even matter if, like, do we call this a flop or Apple doesn't even care if it's a flop? Because they know that they're gonna hit on the second or third iteration of this.
Well,
and traditionally that's what they've done in other spaces.
I think to everybody else, I think everybody else thinks it's a flop, but to them, I don't think it's a flop at all because I think they can afford it.
Yeah.
Right? It's a test bed for them, a very expensive test bed. So what they'll do, they'll take this, they'll learn everything that they could from it and then go back and, you know, refine on it.
Yeah.
We'll make and try it to lighter. Get it down to like 1200.
Yeah.
Right. Like more than half the price. Half the cost.
Yeah. And you know, I've read a lot of stories that in the space, people are looking at glasses as the form factor that would get a lot of people excited. You know, again, Meta's got these Ray-Ban things that people have tried, but you're right, Jack. It all comes back to that app, that killer app. Is it what's going to make me want to do this? It's going to have to be an AR mixed reality type. I could still talk to you. I could still talk to Chris, but then I can also access something. And I don't even know if my eyes are ready for that kind of interaction. We're all reaching for that sci-fi goal of this imaginary world where we have constant information at us. But at the same time, it's like, I got to live in the real world too.
Well, you know, there's another piece to this.
Yeah.
And that is that we really don't know to a large extent what the psychological effects will be of people wearing these things long term.
Right. I don't want to be the guinea pig for that either.
Yeah. You know, and guess what? There are going to be lawsuits about that, right? Somebody's going to put this thing on for 8 hours a day and they're going to go into shock or have an epileptic fit or something's going to happen, right? And that's, you know, that's something that hasn't been addressed. You know, as far as Apple goes, it's not a lot of... Apple's got more money than, you know, I was going to say more money than God. Hopefully he doesn't have a lot, but
God's not about money.
Jack. You know, it's not a big deal to them that they lost. There've been a lot of stuff that they put on the market that didn't work all that well that, you know, they took a loss on and then went on. Chris, you're right. To some extent, they're going to learn a lot from this and they're not going to make the same mistake. But I think we're just too early in the technology. I think we've got to get to a point where it's got to be something like, you know, if I have to put on my glasses like this, it's not a big deal.
Right.
Maybe there's a couple little things on the side that, you know, focus on my glasses. I can turn them on and off as I need to. That's what people are looking for. Not this big monster thing that weighs, whatever, 3 pounds on my head I'm not going to wear that for 8 hours a day. It ain't going
to
happen.
Right.
Like once it gets to like a Minority Report level, something that you'd see in, you know, yeah. Steven Spielberg's Minority Report. Yeah. I think that's when they got it right.
I think that what hit me was the fact they might cancel the 2025 update, because I think most of the people that enjoy the device, and we've had people on the show, especially from the Computer World team. There's, you know, one of their reviewers is really into it and really likes it. And I know
IDC analyst
and the IDC analyst we've had on the show. He's was he a fan?
I think he was. Yeah.
But at least he's a fan of the idea. Like he's a fan of spatial computing down the line. And they were telling me that like there's so much that Apple could do. They could make some software improvements and small tweaks to make this $3,500 device now feel better. And if they're not going to do that, then I think everyone is just going to, like, they're just kicking the ball down the road, and we're going to see something, you know, in 2026, 2027 when they come out with the next version. And so we're just going to all have to just wait until we see that, unless there's another company that comes out and tries to do these glasses that are lightweight and work.
Even if they tweak the software, which they can certainly do, you still got the ergonomic factor that's a problem. This thing is a big, bulky monster thing I put on my head.
Yeah.
Right. And guess what? If it's on my head and I try to get up, I can't see where I'm going.
Right. But it's still more comfortable than some of the earlier stuff that was coming out.
Sure.
Sure. Yeah.
But that's why I say I think we're waiting. We've got to wait for the technology to catch up to the idea.
But we've been waiting for this for 30 years now. I mean, I remember the 90s was all about virtual reality, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how long have we been doing AI? I remember back in school, I don't want to tell you when, you know, the last century, when we were talking about doing AI projects. So, yeah, it just takes time. The technology got to catch up.
So, you know who's going to come in and swoop in, Chris, after he buys TikTok?
Oh, yeah, Elon Musk.
Here goes. Musk is going to come in, and he's going to come up with a VR headset, and he's going to call it VRX or something like that. Anyway, the only reason I said that is because I wanted to transition to our Elon Musk story. So, Tesla, the stock prices actually closed up this week. After Elon Musk said the electric vehicle company plans to begin production of new, quote-unquote, affordable EV models by early 2025, Musk's comments came during Tesla's earnings call on Tuesday after the company reported disappointing first quarter numbers. Revenue fell 9% year over year, its steepest annual decline since 2012. The company previously expected to start production of the new EV models in the second half of 2025. Tesla has not disclosed any details about these new models that are in the works. Typically, the company promotes design concepts years ahead of production in unveiling events. I think he probably said that just so that he could save his stock price from tanking.
Of course.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, once he says that and the stock price goes up, and then you're like, okay, what are the actual details of the affordable? And what do you mean by affordable versus what I think of as affordable? So
he's got a...
Yeah, go ahead.
Tesla's got a very significant problem going forward. You know, aside from the fact that a lot of the stuff they put out there is garbage. I shouldn't say that. That's not fair. But, you know, they just recalled what? How many thousand trucks? All the Cybertrucks?
I think all of them.
Every one of them has to be recalled.
Yeah, I think all of them.
Oh, I didn't see that. Why didn't
something about the gas pedal or something?
Last week, I think it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something about they put on the gas pedal. They wouldn't fit the rubber wouldn't, gas pedal wouldn't fit over the metal. So they put soap on it to get it to stay on there. You can't make this stuff up.
Wow.
But, you know, sometimes I'm glad I don't have millions and millions of dollars to spend on this technology that would, you know, that would piss me off or that would break on me.
Right. But the bigger problem Musk has, quite honestly, is the Chinese are coming after him.
In the EV space.
It's not just the Chinese.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's the Vietnamese. It's the Europeans. And so the question becomes longer term. And who's first to market? He was the leader because they got there first with something that was viable. The question is, 2, 3, 4 years from now, when all of these other guys are in the marketplace as well, if you look at Tesla versus VW or, you know, Rivian's having problems as well, but, you know, what's the one? I can't remember the one from Vietnam, Vin something.
Okay.
And there's a bunch of Chinese guys, Bird and some other stuff. Is Tesla going to be competitive? Are they going to be priced $10,000 more than a Chinese model? I mean, this is the old GM, Ford, Chevy stuff versus you know, Chrysler versus the Japanese all over.
Right. And but are you going to trust a Chinese EV maker versus maybe something that, that Japan puts out, whether it's Toyota or Honda? I mean, I feel like those would be the companies I would trust before I would jump into a Chinese electric vehicle.
Sure. I agree.
Yeah.
But those guys really aren't market players yet. And the reason is because it's not profitable for them yet. It's not that they can't do it.
Yeah.
It's that if you look at where most cars are sold today, it's still, you know, gas models or hybrids.
Yeah.
It's very expensive to build out an electric car. The margins aren't great. So there's just a lot of issues there. But yeah, ultimately, can Tesla stay ahead of the market and dominate like it has over the last few years? And I think the answer is no.
Well, but don't they have kind of a hold on the charging infrastructure? And isn't that more important too? You know, if you are going to buy one of these cars, it feels like you have to have that adapter that works with the Tesla supercharger network versus trying to go the own. I mean, we saw that last summer where all of these other car makers were like, yeah, we're not going to try to roll out a charging station just for this. We'll go with this system. And that's where the real gold is.
The problem with that approach is it doesn't last forever. So Apple had proprietary charging for how long? And now they're all USB-C because they've got the Europeans won't put up with that crap. We may, right? The Europeans and the Japanese and the Chinese will say, we're going to come, there's going to be one standard, and anybody that drives an electric car up to it is going to be able to charge.
Okay.
And by the way, we're already seeing that because a lot of the electric car makers are now giving their purchasers adapters.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not going to matter long term. I mean, you know, it works for a while. It doesn't work forever. You can't do proprietary for very long in the tech space.
I want to add in a story that a friend of mine told me. He went, remember the solar eclipse from a few weeks ago? You know, in the Northeast, it was all along upstate New York and then up into Canada. And so in New England, they didn't have a lot. There were some in New Hampshire and some in Maine. But my friend is really, and he went in 2017. He drove all the way down to South Carolina to go see this. We knew that he was going to go do this. So he went with his parents, and they have a Tesla. And he was telling me about, he basically had to plan his trip to go see this eclipse based on where the Tesla chargers were.
Yep.
And he discovered that there was this town in upstate Maine, population of 1,000, but there was a Tesla charger in the town. And it wasn't even, the population was 300 people.
Yep.
And then thousands of people showed up in this town to watch the eclipse. His bigger problem was not necessarily the chargers, but then getting back to New England from upstate Maine. He said it took him 4 hours just to get out of the town that they were in because of everybody left at the same time. But I always find it weird that if you're an owner and you're using these for long distance trips, that you have to plan your trip, not around where you're going or how you want to get there, but how many miles can you go before you start running out of juice? And then, you know, when you get to the charger, will it be available? He was telling me that he was the first one in line. There were already three people at the charger when he got there, and he had to basically wait and then before he could recharge again. And I think he said he watched the eclipse from basically where the charging station was.
Yeah. Yeah. I've similar stories. I know friends who go, you know, we're up here in New England, would have to go down to New York or Pennsylvania or further, and they would have to stop along the way, find a charging station and wait. I mean, it's not instantaneous charge. It takes you an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours to fully top off your battery. What are you going to do for that three? You know, that adds 2 or 3 hours to the trip each time you stop.
Yeah.
It's very inconvenient. Who wants to do that?
Right. I've been doing college trips with my oldest daughter where we're visiting colleges before she makes her decision. And one of them was a 7 hour trip from where we live to out in Western New York. And I didn't want to even stop just for, I mean, I had to stop at least once for gas. But then it was like, you know, you're just going to pick up some food and eat it on the way. And because you don't want, you know, it was already 6.5 hours. I didn't want to become 7, 8, 9 hour trip. And I can't imagine doing that in an electric vehicle at this point.
Right. And in fact, there have been stories in the press about people who once they had a Tesla, next car they bought was a gas vehicle just because of that. It was inconvenient.
Right.
Hertz, I think it was Hertz.
Yeah, Hertz gave up. They stopped their fleet, right? Yeah.
Right, most of their fleet because they couldn't afford the expense.
And then we had stories last winter about a lot of the, like, yep. Chicago had cold weather and a lot of the batteries were freezing up. Although most of the people that would talk to us about that would say, well, if you're prepping for the recharge, then you wouldn't experience that issue. The people that basically left their car at the airport and they came back and it was frozen. So, because they were parking outdoors.
Even if you charge your battery, you know, when it gets that cold, you're not going to get 300 miles. You're going to get 100 miles.
Yeah. My friend was telling me that the app is really cool in that once you've chosen the charging station as your destination, the car knows when it starts, like while you're driving it starts prepping the battery to be recharged. It starts heating up the cycles. So I thought that was kind of a cool thing too. That's just the software integration though.
Yeah.
So, did you want to talk about like the whole thing with his salary? Yeah. As part of the issue that's going around, you know, is that a dark cloud kind of hanging over a lot of the stuff that Elon Musk doing, or is that just a kind of a sidetrack, side quest type thing?
I think it's a sideshow. I mean, he wants, I don't even remember what the numbers are. They're so astronomical.
56 billion or something like that.
Billions and billions and billions. As I put it, more than the budget of a small foreign country, right?
Right.
And people are suing him because they're saying, look, you know, you're getting all this money. What are we getting in return from the stock market, you know, from Tesla? And not just Tesla, X and all the other stuff he's doing, the solar project, the brain implant chip that he's building. I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
But there is some success. There's some success coming out of these companies that he's doing, right?
Sure.
The brain chip one was good.
I don't remember the number, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, in compensation.
Yeah.
For what? Right? I mean, you know, I'm a stockholder. You're supposed to give me the money, not you.
So is that going to distract him, though? Or is he just be like, I don't care about that?
We'll see. I mean, you know, some people say, who cares? But the financial guys in the world, you know, that buy Tesla stock, those are the guys that are saying, wait a minute, right? I'm staking my reputation on getting my customers to buy your stock, and you want, you know, $300 billion in compensation? No.
Right.
Ain't going to happen.
Okay. All right. I want to switch gears for our final story. This is the one that came out about the U.S. Air Force confirmed that it had its first successful AI dogfight. The U.S. Air Force is putting AI in the pilot seat. In an update on Thursday, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, revealed that an AI-controlled jet successfully faced a human pilot during an in-air dogfight test carried out last year. DARPA began experimenting with AI in December of 2022 as part of its Air Combat Evolution program. It worked to develop an AI system capable of autonomously flying a fighter jet while also adhering to the Air Force's safety protocols. Basically, after carrying out dogfighting simulations using the AI pilot, DARPA put its work to the test by installing the AI system inside an experimental X-62A aircraft, which allowed it to get the AI-controlled craft into the air at Edwards Air Force Base in California, where it says it carried out its first successful dogfight test against a human in September 2023. Human pilots were on board the AI aircraft, so it wasn't completely autonomous, and I guess the pilots could take over if they needed to, but then the Air Force said that they did not need to use the disable switch at any point. The X-62A went against an F-16 controlled solely by a human pilot, where both aircraft demonstrated high aspect nose-to-nose engagements and got as close as 2,000 feet at 1,200 miles per hour. And the funniest part of this whole story is that DARPA doesn't say which aircraft won the dogfight. However, all of the commenters that I'm seeing are like, yeah, the AI won the dogfight.
I mean, there's another piece to this. That they didn't mention.
Okay, what is that?
In the modern age, there are no air-to-air dogfights anymore. You're all sending missiles from 10 miles away at each other.
Okay.
So it's near. In fact, some fighter jets no longer have machine guns in the wings like, you know, they used to have to shoot with, because they know that it's not going to be necessary, that you're going to see. You can see planes coming for 40, 50, 50, 60 miles away. And you got missiles under your wings. That's what you're going to use. It's not going to be a dogfight. So okay. I guess they learned something by this, but I don't know what.
Well, is it a case where then the AI, you know, if an AI is controlling the aircraft, then it could escape if a missile's coming after it?
Maybe. Depends on the missile, right? I mean, you know, missiles are pretty smart, and they fly pretty fast. It's hard. There are systems to defeat missiles for sure. I don't know that AI would do it. What AI would be really good at, in my opinion, is in backing up the pilots and saying, okay, you're making a mistake. It's probably going to be deadly. Don't do that.
Okay.
Turn right instead of left, or right. You know, slow down or speed up or whatever. That's, I think, where the real benefit is going to be longer term. The other piece of it is going to be in autonomous vehicles, because they're going to be attacked as well. Right now, autonomous vehicles are run remotely, right? There's no reason you have to do that. There, in fact, there's some benefit to not doing that. If you can have AI on board that's reliable, when you run an autonomous vehicle, there's a radio signal going back and forth from that vehicle.
Right.
That can be tracked.
Right.
You're not in stealth mode when you're doing that.
Right.
If you're running everything locally on board, there's no radio signal going out. I mean, you're still receiving stuff, right? You're still getting GPS signals and maybe commands from Command Central or whatever. But now you're real stealth mode because there's no signals. You know, it's radio silence. Remember radio silence mode and all the movies we saw?
Right.
That's why they did it.
Yeah. I just think that so you don't really feel like this is a big story, or is this a big, or are you just thinking that the Air Force is probably not going to actually deploy these things?
No, I think it's a big story in the sense that it shows what AI can do.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a big story in the sense that, you know, we're going to be replacing our pilots all of a sudden with AI for nose-to-nose combat. That's kind of what I was getting at. It was really more of a demonstration project. It'll be used in other places for sure.
I think
probably
it'll,
already is.
I think it'll be used as a plot device in Top Gun 3.
There you go.
Whenever, well, you know, or the movies thing. Because, I mean, AI has already been made out to be the villain in so many other of these different movies, whether it's the Mission Impossible one or James Bond, those types of things. So, you know, Maverick is going to have to outduel the AI plane from the evil country or another rival at some point.
What really would have been cool is if they had a demonstration of AI, two planes piloted by AI to see which one.
Right. Right. Maybe that's the next step. And you know, yeah, I mean, I think that the other bigger concern is, like you said, with the ability to disrupt the aircraft via radio signal, that should be a bigger concern rather than whether the AI is smart enough to win in a dogfight. So, yeah. I'm still very, very hesitant on the use of autonomy and robots and things like that in the military, because, you know, we covered this probably 10 years ago when we went down I was working with Computer World, and we went down to Georgia to see a demonstration of machine guns on top of robots. And these were mobile robots. These were not like a Terminator skeleton type, you know, humanoid robot, but rather it was a mobile ground robot, and they attached and the accuracy of those machine guns were pretty impressive. Like we were at a shooting range, and it may have missed the first couple, but then everyone after that, it was just hitting like target after target after target. So that's, you know, and that was 10 years ago. I can only imagine how much better that is now. But they all said, the Army said back then, and I'm sure they're still saying it now, is that the decision about whether to fire upon another human target will always be made by a human and will not be made. Like they're not going to let AI make the decision about firing. It's always going to still be up to a human somewhere in the loop. And I guess that they say that to make me feel better at this point, but, you know.
We'll see how long that lasts.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Jack, any final thoughts?
No, I think it's been a very interesting, I mean, we finished with AI, of course, everyone's talking about it, but AI. I think it's been a very interesting world we live in for AI, because everyone's looking at the high-end stuff. No one seems to be looking at where we're really going to deploy AI workloads long term, which is going to be at the personal level or at the edge level, you know, localized level.
Yeah,
that's I'm estimating that's going to be 75% to 85% of workloads if you look out 3 or 4 years from now. And so when you really need to think about, you know, the story we just talked about, right, the pilot replacement with AI, or, you know, the machine gun or the autonomous car, we're a long way from an autonomous car yet. Well, it's going to get there, and that's where a lot of the AI is going to trickle down to. So if we're only concentrating at the high-end stuff, you know, the large language models, the ChatGPT, I think we're missing a whole big picture of where AI is going to end up longer term.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, we'll keep our eye on that as well. Jack, again, thanks for joining us on the show this week. Good stuff.
My pleasure.
All right. And that's all the time we have for today's episode. Be sure to like the video, subscribe to the channel, add any thoughts that you have below. Join us every week for new episodes of Today in Tech. I'm Keith Shaw. Thanks for watching.